Good morning, everyone. It is Sunday, September 4th, Labor Day weekend. Hope everyone managed to weather the storm last week okay. Hurricane Irene, hence the pushed off. Supposed to do this last week, so we're doing it this week instead. Topic is Preserving Gender Roles, Part 2 in Politics of Exclusion in Judaism. And we're going to be dealing with today an incredibly recent example, as in last year recent, on women rabbis. And to lay the groundwork for people who might not have been following, we're not going to be discussing whether or not women rabbis, merits of them within, Orthodox Judaism. I apologize for not bringing it in. There's actually, if anyone's interested, there's a rare book, or not like rare isn't a hard to find book, called Smicha, S-E-M-I-K-A-H, by someone named Jane Newman, that actually goes through rabbinic sources on ordination, the process, and the like. So if people are interested in that sort of thing, it is a very good read. But the discussion today is about, the controversy that erupted last year with Rabbi Weiss coming up with the title Maharat, which we'll see, and later changing it to Rabbah. For Sarah Horvitz, someone I know up in Riverdale. Now there's actually a Maharat school that, a few friends studying in there. And again, the question isn't on the legitimacy of, the position. The topic, is the politics of exclusion and in terms of what become the dividing lines at different stages. And like we introduced last week with, Mechitza, right? We've seen that, certainly contemporary examples within Orthodox Judaism are going to be matters of gender roles, such that if you sort of, whether or not it fits in with halacha, if you make some certain changes, you're going to be considered, beyond the pale. With Mechitza, we saw that there was an actual halacha involved, or at least, in the rhetoric or polemic, however you want to call it, or Moshe Feinstein or Soloveitchik, there was at least an appeal to a rabbinic source. We'll see today whether or not, that same argument holds true. One other word on sources here. Today, the sources that we're going to be using are mostly going to be from newspapers, as opposed to, we will see, a formal declarative statement. And this kind of gets into, some of the frustrations I've been today about trying to parse out some of, the data that comes out from elements in the Orthodox world. There's a certain group of rabbis, the Moetzes Gedolei HaTorah, that issues several proclamations. We actually have one here that was reprinted. Unfortunately, the Aguda doesn't have a website, and I don't think they're going to have a website because the Gedolim said you can't have a website. There have been people who started their own websites in the name of Aguda that Aguda made them shut down because said we don't want to have a web presence. And as far as I know, there is no certainly online archive or collection of every single proclamation. I think it would be, certainly for archival purposes, wonderful to actually trace through, but I think it's for those very reasons you're not going to see one, because when you actually have, a paper trail and a nice stack of information, then you can actually, evaluate, which is, but if they're Gedolim, who are anyone here to evaluate? So by not actually publicizing it, you can, mitigate some of the controversy. Well, not controversy, you could mitigate some of, the, back discussions, as opposed to, someone just throws out a statement, and that's it, But that's kind of how things work. But we do have one of them cited here, and a lot of these were, thanks to friends of mine online who, helped send me some of these links that, I had trouble finding, on my own. However, with one exception here, and we'll be quoting him a lot, is Rabbi Avi Shafran, who for a while, I believe, was had an official position in Aguda in the PR department. I forget the exact title. What's very useful, because, trying to get the specific ideas of what, people consider Gedolim might actually say, Rabbi Shafran is incredibly useful. And I say this because it's very easy to read what he writes and just immediately have a visceral reaction, immediately get offended. But what Rabbi Shafran does that I think is, very crucial is he pulls no punches. And that he says exactly what he means. And to have that kind of transparency and that sort of bluntness is, you know, on one hand refreshing, but on the other hand very crucial for understanding what's going on. I had a teacher in, in Yeshiva University, Rav Ben Chaim, who used to say, Takshiva achar kach tishal. Listen, pay attention, and then ask. Before you start jumping on, you know, individuals, first you say, well, what is it that people are saying? And in order to do that, you have to appreciate when people actually say something clear-cut, very explicit, and then you can go back and sort of deal with it. All right, so please try to keep this in mind, because, you know, the sources that we're dealing with aren't academic. These are, you know, things that were made in public press statements, but they do illustrate, and I think, you know, as we'll see very clearly, how these gender roles, even in matters that don't necessarily resemble halacha, right, unlike, say, Mechitza last week, you know, because we're not going to see too many halachic sources here, you know, really are, you know, serve as modern-day dividing lines in terms of whether or not one group is going to consider another group orthodox. All right? Yeah. Yeah, what's good? Merge the two halves together. Ed, start us off with source number one.
The Gula welcomes new title for controversial clergywoman.
This is, yeah, you should know that when I put all these together, they're in chronological order based on the date of publication. So this is from February 5th, 2010, from the Jewish Star.
After years of beating around the bush, Rabbi Avi Weiss came right out this past week and said what everyone assumed he'd been thinking all along. Sarah Horwitz, the woman who has mentored and trained, he has mentored and trained to function as an Orthodox cleric, is, in his view, an Orthodox rabbi. Rabbi Weiss of the Hebrew Institute of Riverdale, who founded both Yeshivat Kochavei Torah for men and Yeshivat Maharat for women, announced that after a year-long trial run for Horwitz, with the title Maharat, an acronym for Manhiga Hilchatit Ruchanit Toranit, she will henceforth be known by a more familiar title, sounding title, Rabbah. This will make clear to everyone that Sarah Horwitz is a full member of our rabbinic staff, a rabbi with the additional quality of a distinct woman's voice. Rabbi Weiss explained.
Right, so these, you know, given that these are quotes, I mean, I don't know if they were picking up these things from other statements that he made, but at least based on here, you know, if Rabbi Weiss, according to the quote, is, quote, a rabbi, the additional quality of a distinct woman's voice. This is how he is presenting it. Hmm. All right, assuming again the quotes are accurate, which for the, you know, time being, let's assume they are. Yeah.
Is that another poor choice of words? Kalisha?
It's interesting. I don't think he means it in those terms, because Kol Isha generally refers to singing,
yeah, no,
as opposed
it's just
to
something people can pick up on.
It's
the same way as Ada.
That is, thank you for bringing that up, because that is a wonderful example of, you know, because the term Ada, when the organization came out, was a really silly, silly name, because the only time the word Ada appears in that form is by Korah. Zakar is Ada Ra'azot. Right, so, you know, and as opposed to Adat Yisrael, could it? I wouldn't say it's a poor choice of words that people are going to pick up on, because he's not going to use the term Kol Isha. I mean, to the audience he's speaking, you know, a woman's voice means something else. And believe you me, there's enough that people are going to find fault with than to pick on these semantics. All right.
Over this past year.
Mm-hmm.
I have on numerous occasions in talks and symposia around the country said as clearly as I could that Maharat means rabbi, and that Sarah Horwitz has received smicha, having studied the same curriculum as any man would study for ordination. She has achieved this goal.
Right. So again, quite explicit here. All right, continue.
But outside of a shul in Riverdale, the title of Maharat wasn't really working, Rabbi Weiss indicated. When Sarah Horwitz had officiated at funerals or visited hospitals, or when the title of Maharat appears in newspapers, it has not resonated. Moreover, at times, the term Maharat has been used inappropriately in a disrespectful way, he said. The announcement is met with approval from Rabbi Avi Shafran, a spokesman for Agudath Yisrael of America. though perhaps not for the reason Rabbi Weiss might have been looking for. It is laudable that the disingenuous title has been abandoned. The new one better reflects the intentions of its conquerors. Now it would be good for them to come clean, too, about what the entire venture really is. An essential break with the Masorah of Klal Yisrael, Rabbi Shaffron said.
Yeah. That's so... Right. So the first thing is, you know, that people are going, you know, trying to, you know, parse out is, you know, the title Maharat was supposed to mean one thing. Rabbi Weiss felt it wasn't achieving its goal. So he said, okay, now go and call it Rabba. Right? Avi Shaffron's response, a spokesman of a, well, I don't know if in that particular line he was actually representing a good or not, but I think it's safe to say that certainly it's in line, was basically that what Rabbi Weiss is trying to do is, what was that quote again? An essential break with the Masorah of Klal Yisrael. Break with the tradition of the Jewish people. Yeah.
I venture to maybe put you on the spot. What's your take on it? Do you think she's legit a rabbi?
We'll talk about that afterwards. Want to focus now on, you know, matters of, you know, the exclusion part here, and, you know, maybe we'll get to that at the end.
Mm-hmm. I mean, does this strike everybody as essentially he's doing exactly what JTS did?
I'm trying to think. I don't, in the statements here, I don't see, I'm not sure if it actually uses the term conservative as much as it's no longer orthodox.
Well,
they ordain women.
Flat out.
Yeah. They've done that for you. People have left it with it. I do think that is an underlying, I do think it's implicit in the statement. And I think, you know, if you really want to really want to focus on it, I don't think it would be a stretch to say, who are the first people to ordain women? They weren't Orthodox. So since it was started by non-Orthodox, whoever does it now is doing something that's non-Orthodox.
Yeah.
I don't know if that logic was expressly stated, but I do think it is an undercurrent in what people are saying. And that as long as if it didn't, and we've seen that from, I shouldn't say we've seen all of it, but I know I've seen some examples of that when if something came up, started in conservative Judaism, or they said, well, they started it and therefore it must be treif. And just by that sort of association, which is, you know, I think kind of important here too. Dana, this is from Vus's Nice when they printed an actual statement. Signed by Moetzes Gedolei HaTorah, and I have the signatories on the bottom. This is source number 2 from February 25th, 2010.
Rabbi Avi Weiss has conferred sminchah on a woman, has made her an assistant rabbi at the Hebrew Institute of Riverdale, where she carries out certain traditional rabbinical functions, and has now given her the title of Rabba, formerly Maharat. He has stated that the change in title is designed to, quote, make it clear that Sarah Hurwitz is a full member of our rabbinic staff, and rather than the additional quality of a distinct woman's voice.
The quote that we saw in the previous source.
These developments represent a radical and dangerous departure from Jewish tradition and the Masorah HaTorah, and must be condemned in the strongest terms. Any congregation with a woman in a rabbinical position of any sort cannot be considered Orthodox.
There you go. All right. You know,
pretty straight.
Pretty straightforward. Any congregation with a woman in a rabbinical position of any sort cannot be considered Orthodox.
So, how do you figure they would feel about someone who uses the title Yoetzet HaTorah?
I have no idea.
Or Yoetzet HaMasa, rather.
I honestly don't know. Look, one of the signers here is Rav David Feinstein. If you want to go and ask him, go right ahead. Right. What I think is fascinating here is you'll notice, you know, what's important here in terms of not being considered Orthodox. There's no halacha being cited. There's no pasuk being cited. It's a dangerous departure from Jewish tradition and Masorah HaTorah, which you could say is, you know, tradition of Torah. Right, without, you know, textual justifications. Unlike, again, the Mechitza, you know, Tshuva that we saw from Moshe Feinstein, or the letters from Masalevichik, there was at least some appeal to, you know, a halakhic source, which, again, you could agree or disagree with, but at least that was part and parcel of their argument. In the statement here about, you know, not being considered Orthodox, there's, you know, the major flaw of it is that you're doing something different that the community of Orthodox Judaism has not done.
Altifer Shminat Tzibur, there's something to be said there.
It's an interesting thought about that, about Altifer Shminat Tzibur, because if you want to, well, you know what, hold off on that question. That'll be a good discussion for the end of Altifer Shminat Tzibur. But please remind me about that. Yeah, take number 3.
RCA, Rabbi Weiss agree. Todah no rifa.
Yeah.
Update. The following is an updated version of an article in this week's newspaper. It confirms our report from an unnamed source that Rabbi Avi Weiss would back down over his confrontation with the Orthodox establishment over his decision to ordain a woman, Sarah Hurwitz, as an Orthodox rabbi. Shakespeare's dictum only applies to roses. A rabbi by any other name is not a rabbi. Following weeks of negotiation with the Rabbinical Council of America, Rabbi Avi Weiss has made an about-face and agreed not to confer the title Rabbah on graduates of his Yeshivat Maharat for women. The RCA issued a statement Friday afternoon that confirmed a report in the March 5th issue of the Jewish Star. The story in the print edition quotes an unnamed source who said, "They're negotiating. The RCA does not want to kick him out, and he does not want to be kicked out. But this is an intolerable activity. He, i.e. Weiss, is an impetuous fellow, which is okay. Everything is in how he words it. If I had to guess, when Rabbi Weiss retracts, he's going to say this was the right thing at the wrong time, and I regret doing it, and I commit to not doing it for a period of time." End quote. Rabbi Bezal Herring, executive vice president of the RCA, did not return calls for comment, but on Friday afternoon, the organization released a statement to announce that Rabbi Weiss had backed down. Rabbi Weiss said as much in a letter addressed to RCA president Rabbi Moshe
Klitenik,
which was released to the public. It is not my intention or the intention of Yeshivat Maharat to confer the title of Rabbah upon its graduates, Rabbi Weiss wrote. Yeshivat Maharat prepares women for positions of religious leadership in the Orthodox community. Each student who completes its course of study in Tanakh, Talmud, Halacha, and Jewish thought, and is deemed fit by her faith, knowledge of our Masoret, ethical integrity, and temperament to assume positions of religious leadership in Orthodox institutions, will be confirmed as Manhiga Hilchatit, Ruchanit, Taranit, Maharat. End quote. The RCA statement praised Rabbi Weiss and said the dispute was resolved with, quote, adherence to Torah principles and in a spirit of cooperation for the sake of peace and unity, end quote. The statement affirmed RCA's support for women in positions of leadership, but cautioned that, quote, any innovations that impact the community as a whole should be done only with the broad support of the Orthodox rabbinate and a firm grounding in the eternal Masorah of the Jewish people.
All right, so stop there for a second. It goes on in, you know, yeah, not too much context here for a bit, but at least in this paragraph, there seems to have been, you know, from the earlier statements, a little bit of a backtracking. And, you know, the RCA statement also, you know, appears that it kind of goes to what you were saying about, you know, differs from Yeshiva suffering from the community of only with broad support of the Orthodox rabbinate, right? What a firm grounding in eternalness of the Jewish people means is a little bit harder to quantify, you know, but certainly you can have a better sense of it. Just turn the page.
What are the terms why is he using? Maniga, Hilchanit, Ruanit, Tonit. What does that mean?
Maniga, it's a manhi. Well, all right. So manhiga would be the founding of a, someone who leads in a certain path, like the term minhag. Hilchatit would be for halacha, ruchanit, spiritual, and toranit would be Torah. Mm-hmm. All right.
When he did this about face, I wouldn't be surprised if a bunch of the students at his school wanted to quit. They wanted to become rabbis, and he sold them out.
I don't think, from the people that I know there, I don't think that was the big deal. I mean, you could argue in a sense here that there's something semantic about it. It very well, you know, I think it was probable, right, that King coming up with the term Maharat was specifically not rabbi. Right, because if you actually outright and say rabbi, right, stuff like this happens, and you kind of get, you know, bambast. The main point, as I understand it, or at least, you know, taking one side, isn't so much, you know, what is the title, but how do we have knowledgeable, educated women that can be on equal footing as their male peers? Meaning, the study of smicha, right? You know, based on, you know, how to put this. The minimum requirements, I think, for most smichas is at least yoredeya, specifically kashrus. Like, people will take a take-home test from Rav Zalman Nechemya Goldberg in Yeridale, like Laws of Kashrus, and pass that and call, and it'll be enough to call themselves rabbi. Not enough, I mean, there are other rules for getting into, say, the RCA, but that'll be enough. So the question really is, where is there, you know, a source that says a female can actually do that? And he was also very clear that the roles that a woman would be as a rabbi would not be in the name of, say, fully egalitarian. Don't believe any of the ones starting from out would say counting minyan, sign for, you know, unkibbutz, or sign as a Jewish witness, right? But for other things, in terms of officiating a funeral, you don't need to be a man to do that. To, you know, there are a lot of things that you halachically don't need to have a man in that position for, halachically. You just don't. There's no silting like, there. You know, if someone wants to, you know, handle a ship house, pay hospital visits, right? You certainly don't need a man to, you know, visit sick people, which are other components of a professional rabbi.
What about something like stepping out from behind the linen side of the mechitza to give a Shabbos drasha?
So for that, I mean, if you know the, if you dominate HIR?
No.
All right, so HR actually has a very inventive mechitza there, where if you just look at it, and I think the way I was told it was done this intentionally, you can't tell, there is a mechitza, you can't really tell which side is the men's section or the women's section, in that they're both, in that it's symmetrical. The bima actually is somewhat, is in the middle, and has a mechitza around it, as does the pulpit up front, where there's, you know, technically a mechitza around it that separates it. Like, you've got a men's side, women's side, you've got a straight mechitza here, kind of like forms a circle for the bima and a path up. So you don't really have a crossing over the mechitza there.
So the rabbi can't be seen when the rabbi gives a drasha?
It's not a matter of being seen, you know, but there is a division. I mean, you know, would it be... Yeah, so it would kind of defeat the purpose of what Moshe Feinstein said. Yeah, so as far as that goes, sure. As far as, you know, what would be the problem with him speaking, would you mind taking, if you turn the page, to pick up from the paragraph that says, their principal objection.
Turn the page to
yeah.
Four?
Yeah, we're on page four. It's a paragraph that says their principal objection.
Oh, where the principal objection is based on Sneas modesty and the understanding of Rabbi Avi Shaffer, not good as director of public policy. Sneas isn't a mode of dress. It includes the idea that women are demeaned and not honored when they're put in the public eye and put on a pedestal. The position he has created violated this concept, Shaffer said. Whether the organization violates a specific halacha is unimportant, he explained.
Yeah, I added in the, italics there. Yeah, go ahead.
Putting a woman in front of a group of men or women on a regular or ad hoc basis is violated of the sneas. Halacha attempts accomplishes much more than the letter of the law. There is nothing in the Shul on the Aruch about keeping a cat in the Aron Kodesh. It's technically permitted, but it's wrong to do.
Yeah.
Perhaps, oh, sorry.
Go ahead, continue.
Perhaps most importantly, Weiss has moved without made any authority, Shaffrin said. If Weiss had the ruling of a world-class posek, he would have claimed that he's not departing, but he doesn't have any such backings of the recognized orthodox spectrum, Haredi or Central. He's changing the face of Mitzvah without anyone of status behind him.
Yeah, I'll continue. Actually, all right, let's put a pause here right now. So, yeah.
So, wait a minute. Sneas isn't a mode of dress. Sneas includes the idea that women are demeaned and not honored when they're put in the public eye? Really?
According to Avi Shaffrin, yes.
We're supposed to demean women.
No. It's not you're supposed to demean women. It's when you put women in the public eye and on a pedestal, you're actually demeaning them. That's how the statement is, or at least that's how I parse the statement.
Yes.
You can disagree with the content, but what he is saying is, when women are placed in public, they are in fact not honored and demeaned.
So, Rebbetzin Esther Youngress is in violation of Sneas when she...
You are free to take this up, listen.
Yeah. No, I'm asking the question based on this. Yeah. Would that be the case?
I don't know. I you'd have to ask,
All right.
Having
it's certainly not consistent with practices I've seen, even in, my old show in Jacksonville, the rabbis are black hat yeshivish, but the girls would talk during after they would bad mitzvah, and the girls would address the congregation.
Oh, there you go.
Cool.
So, all right. So the important things here, like to pick out, right, that I think are very revelatory about Orthodox Judaism, at least in the eyes of Rabbi Shaffrin, is one, it's that whether the ordination violates a specific halacha is unimportant. Right? We're not talking about halacha. Right? We're not, and, you know, it's violative of tzniut, which is more than a letter of the law. There's a super halachic ethic that one to which one must adhere. That's point one. And point two, the problem is, additionally, Rabbi Avi Weiss is actually going off on his own and making decisions that he thinks are in, you know, best interest based on his judgment, not following the rabbis that Rabbi Avi Shapiron wishes that he would follow. Right? So, 2 points, very crucial there, which, you know, we'll revisit at the end when we wrap all this stuff up, you know, for today. While condemnation of him, the Aguda, was not unexpected, more centrist Orthodox voices were equally unforgiving. The ordination of women as rabbis represents a serious and inappropriate breach with our sacred tradition and is beyond the pale of Orthodox Judaism, said Rabbi Stephen Kruzansky, prominent Orthodox figure and a rabbi of congregation B'nai Yeshurun in Teaneck.
If you were to ask him, he would not say he's centrist.
I don't know.
It's funny that they picked him.
Well, what's the publication? The publication is Jewish Star. I don't know what the Jewish Star's real target audience is. Who's centrist, who's right, and who's left is all relative.
Yeah.
Whatever. On his blog, Rabbi Kruzansky lambasted Weiss's move, both from halachic and historical perspective. Also, interesting thing here that I just picked up on. You'll notice how Rabbi Weiss doesn't always get that title, Rabbi, in the discussion here.
Oh, nice.
Right? Right? On his blog, now, typically, like, I understand in journalistic, you know, styles, you call someone by the title first, and then you know, Vivian used the last name. Not entirely consistent here. Although, the truth, actually, I take that back. Because there are times here where it does say Shapiron said, and here it says Rabbi Kruzansky lambasted. So, you know what? I'll take that one back. It could just be various journalistic standards at the paper. Anyway, lambasted his move both from a halachic and historical perspective. The role of female clergy, quote, not only mimics reform, but is in fact a throwback to pagan ideologies and a perennial challenge to religious establishments. Well, all rabbis are created equal, but they do not all carry equal weight. Kruzansky explained in the telephone interview, tradition strives for consensus. In almost every case, and the exceptions are literal exceptional cases, the halacha, law, minhag, custom, practice, and recommendation, etc., will follow the consensus of rabbis, and certainly when the matter at hand has national implications. All right. And you can go through some of the some of the exceptions here. There is a there are discussions in the article about etzet halacha, women taking on other roles. You know, feel free to read that as well. So from Rabbi Kruzansky, who at least based on the paper is called centrist, I don't know whether or not relative to Aguda, I have no idea. So you know what? Let's leave it as such. But here, at least, he does make that appeal to mimicking reform, which seems to be bad. And the greatest problem, again, seems to be you're doing something that is different, that is without the consensus of everyone else.
What's troubling me is you are raising the issue of, is there a halakhic objection?
Yeah.
And he seems to, apparently, Kruzansky gives a halakhic objection, but it's not here.
Where do you...
Second to last paragraph on page 4.
Yes and no. It says here, we'll follow the consensus of rabbis.
No. The previous paragraph.
Oh. A throwback
Kruzansky to... lambasted Weiss's move both from a halakhic and historical perspective.
We'll get to that at the end. That's a very interesting pickup there. Even though it's from a halachic perspective, it has to do more with not a specific halacha being violated, but a violation of a perceived halachic process. All right? Ed, take us to source number 4. This is from Tuesday, March 9th.
Aguda. RCA and Abbe Weiss' agreement on Rabbah is a superficial move. Upon consultation with its rabbinic leadership, Aguda Yisrael of America issued the following statement today. The leadership of the Rabbinical Council of America and Rabbi Avi Weiss have apparently reached agreement that Rabbi Weiss would no longer confer the title of Rabbah upon graduates of his women's seminary, but rather the title Maharat. This superficial move does not in any way change the position of the Moetzei Gedolei HaTorah, that placing women in traditional rabbinic positions departs from the Jewish Masorah, that any congregation with a woman in such a position cannot call itself Orthodox, that the leadership of a respected rabbinical organization seems to have capitulated to Rabbi Weiss's enterprise is deeply dismaying. We trust that this capitulation does not represent the perspective of the principled majority of the organization's member rabbis.
Right. So to follow the timeline here, first there was Maharat, people so-so about that, or at least, you know, not happy, but whatever. Then there was Rabbah, all hell breaks loose. Bit of a retraction back to Maharat. That was seemed to have been okay for the RCA, but the core position of the Moetzei Gedolei HaTorah here is that, you know, any women in a rabbinical position departs from Orthodox Masorah and no longer can consider itself Orthodox, regardless of the title. And here, at least, there, you know, is, it's not just that Rabbi Weiss is doing something or did something incorrect, but now it's also, hey, the RCA is no longer pulling, really pulling its own way. Yeah.
I guess what's troubling me is, you know, you've sort of said that Hurwitz and anybody whom he ordains is not doing anything for which a male rabbi is required.
I don't. Yeah, as far as I know. Yeah.
So what is it? So it doesn't meet his objection. I mean, it's not a real rabbinical position. It seems to me he's only doing it so that the
when you talk. So what does it mean to be a rabbinical position? Would be the real question here, right? A lot of things that rabbis do, in theory, anyone could do. Like, one example would be, say, Masadr Kiddushin, right? I've always... Masadr Kiddushin is, from a halachic perspective, in terms of what you do, it's relatively minimal, right? Masadr Kiddushin is one who sets the order of, you know, the wedding ceremony. You make sure things are done halachically, but in many respects, you're just a traffic cop. And you're just checking off, making sure, okay, this is fine, this is fine, this is fine. You look over to the ksuba, you tell people where to sign. When you're under the chuppah, maybe you speak, maybe you don't speak. You know, you call people up, you make sure witnesses see it, and sometimes just telling people where to stand because everyone's head is, you know, elsewhere. If you have a wedding without a Masadr Kiddushin, your wedding is still kosher, right? It's not a core element of a wedding. It's a, I believe, more of the social designation of, remember what I subtitled this, preserving gender roles. You are now giving women a role in the Jewish community that they previously did not have. That alone is a sufficient deviation to no longer consider you Orthodox. That seems to be the argument. Right? It doesn't necessarily matter what they do. I mean, I know Sir Hurwitz gives you know, the Durasha on Shabbat from time to time. You know, teaching Torah. Right? Worst thing in the world. I mean, maybe, I mean, if you don't like what she says, possibly. You know. But, you know, technically, like, do you have to be a rabbi to give up and, you know, give the Shabbos drasha? Yeah, it might be nice. You know, there, you know, could be some, you know, if someone has smicha, maybe they could do a better job than someone who doesn't, though that's clearly not the case in all situations. Well, I mean, Nechama Leibowitz taught her up. And interesting with Nechama Leibowitz, and, you know, she's an interesting counterpoint because she was clearly respected as a teacher of Torah, you know, did not have the same, you know, I never met her. But from what I've been told about her, I mean, yes, she had a PhD, but people went to her not because, you know, she tried to make a feminist statement, but it was she was the best in the world at what she did.
Her primary thing was chumash, was it not?
Right, which probably also helps because giving parshanut is a really non-threatening. You know, when you're talking about getting in the matter, and we saw that with conservative Judaism, they only were perceived as a threat by the Orthodox, or at least they really started to be perceived as a threat by the Orthodox when they started going, actually having the gall to make their own halachic decisions without consulting with the Orthodox. Whereas if, you know, the worst thing you have is, oh, I've got a different shot in Radak, you know, practical consider, it's not the, you know, not the, not much is going to happen for that. All right.
More like
redaction, right? Well, I mean, yeah, it's relatively, it's a lot safer theologically, No pun intended there. Ed, could you take us with source number 5? Backlash to a visit by Sarah Horvitz. So to explain what, you know, the situation here, we're not going to read the whole article. Basically, the Young Israel of Hewlett, you know, decided to host Sarah Horvitz as a speaker. That drew outrage from a lot of other people in the Five Towns community. Skip to the paragraph that has the underline at the bottom of page 6.
But the most prominent criticism came in a newspaper article by Rabbi Aryeh Zev Ginsberg of the Chofetz Chaim Torah Center in Cedarhurst. Writing in the Five Towns Jewish Times, he claimed to have been asked by one of the senior Gedolei Hador, great leaders of the generation, as well as by several of my distinguished colleagues, to bring to the attention of the general community the great Biazon HaTorah.
Biazon HaTorah.
Bizayon.
Bizayon.
The degradation of the Gedolei Torah, Torah rates, that took place in our community this past Shabbos.
Yeah, turn the page. Actually, you know, continue. He did not name the other Rabbanim.
He did not name the other Rabbanim, although he promised that they would be identified upon request. A request by the Jewish staff for the names was unsuccessful. Horvitz may be proficient in the entire Shach and Taz, which I have no way of knowing, yet I am highly doubtful, Ginsberg wrote, referring to the works of two primary halakhic commentators on the Shulchan Aruch. Her and Rabbi Weiss's actions sent a loud and clear message to all who heard them. The unified words of our Gedolei Torah and distinguished Rabbanim mean absolutely nothing, he said. The concept of Das Torah, Emunas
Chachamim,
trust in scholars, and Kavod for Talmidei Chachamim are all ancient ideas that are to be tossed to the side, along with our ancient Mesorah, all for the sake of feminism and perceived equality, the article continued.
Okay, so you can feel free to, you know, read the article and take these home and read the rest of the articles here. All right. If you can come up with, you know, themes of what was the real objection here, right? You can, you know, narrow it down to a couple of, you know, maybe one broader sense of Rabbi Avi Weiss did something different. In doing so, you can, you know, say he is promoting a change within Orthodox Judaism, which you could argue was in fact the intent to create a change. The problem was, didn't play by these perceived rules in terms of giving due deference to specific rabbis that these people, you know, would say you have to listen to these individuals. And we'll couch it in such terms where even though there is no halach, or at least we haven't seen here anything halachic, and in fact Avi Shafran, you know, kind of admitted that what was done was not halachically incorrect, but because it went against, you know, that sense of tradition, considered non-Orthodox. What I think this discussion really helps, you know, elucidate is something that we've discussed as a matter of theme here in the modern sense, past, you know, several decades, like we saw with Saul Lieberman in the Orthodox, where at one point Orthodox Judaism meant by implication that it means you follow Torah, you follow Halacha, you follow, you know, some form of traditional Jewish law, which is then taken on its own life, as in this is the only way to do so. In a sense, I've argued this elsewhere, it's no longer the Torah that's important, but rather being part of the Orthodox Jewish world, however that's defined, which is more of a halachic sociological argument. Now, Dana, you mentioned the point of, you know, Al Tefer Shminat Sibor, don't deviate from the community. Question is, what is, quote, the community? What is, quote, the Orthodox community? From a clear halachic perspective, yeah, you know, there are things that you can't do. Truth is, Rabbi Avi Weiss has his own shul in Riverdale. He's the Mar Das Riverdale shul. There he can set up what he does there. In terms of what does that mean for everyone else? Well, yes, if you're part of a culture and you break certain cultural taboos, you can get kicked out of that culture.
Well, one factor.
Yeah.
Also, it's conspicuous that some pretty heavy hitters have lined up against him, and he has not lined up even a single rabbi with gravitas, if you will.
That is a wonderful point. Why does a rabbi with gravitas matter in this case?
Because...
What is the role of gravitas?
If nothing else, he would be able to represent himself as a leader of the Jewish community.
How would you... Wait a second. But that, in fact, kind of defeats a purpose.
Okay.
You're a leader in the Jewish community, but only if you, you know, appeal to a higher authority?
There's a story about Rav... Actually, it's not a story. Rav Kahana, when he was seeking election to Knesset, sought an endorsement from pretty much every major rabbi in Israel, and they all said the same thing: I support what you're doing, but I can't back you publicly because it would create a schism within the Jewish community.
Okay.
I have a feeling that maybe there's one person who kind of said the same thing: I wish I could support what you're doing publicly.
Well, we actually saw that with some stuff from the conservative Judaism with Rav Lieberman making that kind of a report.
Well, that would not be accepted.
So here's what I could answer with that. Well, one, as we saw with Saul Lieberman, if there are certain things that, you know, violate the perceived notion, even if someone signs off on it, it doesn't mean that it's going to cause a schism as much as that person's own credibility and gravitas would be diminished. Right?
Sure.
So in which case it's tautological in that, you know, no, we already decided this can't be and we'll reject anyone who says otherwise. Two, you could be arguing it from a political perspective. Would it have made sense? And the broader Orthodox world? Possibly, but the truth is they were never going to buy into it anyway.
Right.
Question is, why should you care? The other question, and I think that really is what gets down to it. When you have a group of Moetzei Gedoliator, the people will assume, have a certain rabbinic authority greater than other rabbis. That carries a whole lot of assumptions with it. And it basically gets down to, you have to listen to these rabbis that I think are great because I say so. And if anyone is interested, I did a post on this on my website about Gedolatry and but the point is, I mean, it was basically trying to unpack what are all the implications about saying, well, you have to listen to a Gedol. Who's a Gedol? Well, people that we say are Gedol. And let's say he goes off on his own. And the question is, like, who gets to be considered a Gedol?
Have you ever met a rabbi who really was a Gedol who would use that term about himself?
Honestly, have I met somebody who'd use that term? I don't think so. But that's, you know, again, not entirely the point. If it's basically, the complaint is Rabbi Weiss is doing something that we don't like, right? And it's, you know, if you want to say that Rabbi Weiss is violating halacha, open up a book and say this is bad. You want to say you're violating Masorah, he's violating certainly what have been Orthodox cultural norms, which I think certain communities will automatically assume have innate religious significance, which, you know, is something I dealt with elsewhere on the website. But what I do think is fascinating here for our purposes, you know, this whole politics of exclusion series, you go back to, you know, certainly biblical and rabbinic periods. What got you kicked out of the camp was actually violating Torah. Today, what gets you kicked out of camp isn't necessarily violating Torah. It's violating certain norms that the community has accepted.
Where does tznius come in? Rabbi Shaffron invoked tznius.
Yeah.
So, is tznius halakha? Is tznius...
That's a shear in its own... That is a shear in its own right. That's not something that can be addressed now, in terms of specifically what it is in the range of opinions that would address, you know, be addressed with that. But the point...
Maybe, at least...
It depends how you define it. It will take way too long to get through here.
Okay.
But the fact that it is invoked here shows, well, we have a certain concept of the role of women in our Jewish communities. Violation of that, it therefore makes someone non-Orthodox. From a social perspective, could be, you know, true, but it also shows that the focus is no longer on keeping Torah, but rather keeping the society the way we see fit. To throw in a counter example here, you know, if a yeshiva gets caught laundering money, right, no one says they're no longer Orthodox, right? Let's put it this way. I haven't seen statements, you know, by the same token. I mean, again, since there is no archive of Moetzei Gedolei Torah, I haven't seen statements. I concede, lo ra'iti eino ra'aya. The fact that I haven't seen it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. going to give that. I have not seen nearly as much press when a scandal such as money laundering or, you know, that crazy case in Jersey recently that also involved, you know, selling organs, of the same people coming out and saying that these people aren't Orthodox. I don't see that. That doesn't, or if it does happen, it is not covered with the same ferocity as something like this. Okay, that much I think, you know, is a little bit easier to quantify in terms of, you know, what people say. Just do a few Google searches on that from our recent events, right? Which shows, I think it does help show in terms of what someone gets excluded from Orthodox Judaism today has less to do with strict adherence to Torah law as much as, are you giving deference to the culture, which is somewhat of an amalgam of what people do and a weird form of populism, not in terms of both in terms of doing what everyone else does, but also of accepting the quote correct rabbis. Yeah.
I guess what bothers me is I feel you're blurring the line between invective and exclusion. You know, a lot of this stuff sounds like the stuff that goes on in daily politics. And, you know, what does exclusion really mean? I mean, does it mean that they won't let their sons marry Avi Weiss's daughters? That they won't count him in a minyan? That they won't bury him in their cemetery?
That's an interesting question. What are the, in terms of the practical ramifications, that is an interesting point. Whether or not that they would apply the same halachot that, you know, or not same halachot, but let's say, you know, the statements that we saw from Rav Moshe Feinstein on conservative, would that also apply to Rabbi Weiss for, you know, at HIR? That is an interesting question. I haven't seen that expressed fully, but even if it is, that could be an interesting distinction there.
Because people throw around invective all the time. They say, oh, this guy's not Jewish. I mean, it's just, so, you know, it's like Obama's a communist.
This is repeated far too often, though. And I guess, you know, well, maybe.
I mean, you know, I guess maybe what you're saying is the question is, do you treat him like a conservative Jew in the sense that maybe you wouldn't set foot in his shul or you wouldn't eat in his kitchen?
Right.
Or a shul's kitchen.
Oh. You know what? That is a great question, yeah.
Although it, maybe it says it here once in all these sources, but it doesn't seem to be the primary thing. A shul caught laundering money or selling organs isn't going to set a precedent saying that it's allowed. Mm. Ordaining a woman as a rabbi is setting a precedent that
sure
could be repeated.
You
later.
Are right, and you're there was a line there about something about perpetuity, and also you could say there's a difference between one hand doing a sin and the other hand justifying one, being it's like, okay, yeah, they did something wrong, versus they did something wrong and they say it's okay, mm-hmm. right? But again, what are the things that you're doing wrong, right? Are they neged halacha, or are they neged, you know, our culture? Are they neged what our expectations of what Orthodox is? Yeah.
I want to pull you back to the question I asked earlier. You said we'll get to it in the discussion.
Yeah.
Would you consider Sarah Horowitz legit? Would you walk into a synagogue that she was holding under her
leadership? I've gotten at HIR when she was the officiating, you know, rabbinic figure for that particular week. Mm-hmm. My own sense, I discussed this here in other contexts of, you know, rabbis. The title rabbi today does not have the same halachic weight that it once did, for the simple fact that we don't have the Sanhedrin. You know, pretty much anyone can call themselves whatever title they want. You know, people call themselves rabbi from a whole lot of places. You don't necessarily know what credentials they are. The distinction that I've made in this shul is if, you know, someone has a title, call them whatever title you want. If you respect them in that particular role, then you deal with someone professionally. Example I gave is, let's say you have a doctor, right? You know, someone comes and calls themselves a doctor. Really don't know what their credentials are. You know, you're not going to go and ask, you know, for certification. We ask, okay, where did you go to med school? Where did you do a PhD? If you don't think someone's a good doctor, you're not going to go to them for medical advice. If you think someone is a lousy scholar, you're not going to ask for their opinion on scholarship. Someone's a rabbi, you don't think they're a very good rabbi, you don't think they're very knowledgeable, or, you know, for whatever other reason, then you just don't, you know, ask halachic questions to them. right? And, you know, that could apply to whether or not, you know, they were colleagues in your rabbinical school or, you know, wherever else they happen to go. If you know someone happens to be an Amar, if you know someone's ignorant, all right, you can call them rabbi. You just don't necessarily need to treat them as such. To me, this isn't, you know, I don't consider it, you know, one of the biggest deals. That's just, you know, my take for it. I think, you know, somewhat unrelatedly, professionally, I don't know how much it's really going to accomplish just from a, you know, set of economics. I mean, it's more speculation. It's not an actual, I don't have a value judgment of whether or not, you know, it's good or bad. You know, serve a need? Well, that would be up to communities to really decide for themselves. I know of two shuls, HIR included, that
what
currently, Hebrew Institute of Riverdale, that have a maharat. By maharat, I mean in that title. There are many more synagogues that do have women on their staff in some educational capacity. And I would think it would be up to each shul to determine for itself, is this a need that we, you know, have to pay for, you know, someone to have specifically a female in this role? Like, what advantage? I mean, normally, if you would have, you know, the old feminist argument is equal pay for equal work, right? But if you have a man in that position, could halakhically do a whole lot more. Let's say counting for minyan, it's pretty big, especially, you know, if you're in bigger communities, you're short for a minyan. The fact that you've got, you know, a male rabbinic figure there instead of a female rabbinic figure can make, you know, somewhat of a difference. But if it's up to us, I would say it's really up to the kehilot to determine for themselves who do they want in which position. And if this is something that the membership feels that they need such that they want to pay for, okay. If they don't, they don't. You know, and in terms of, you know, what I would have preferred to see, though, is, you know, much of the big deal has been made based on gender. In terms of Sarah Horowitz, females study this. There are, you know, I have to try to be delicate here. I'd have much preferred that the merits would have been touted a lot more than just the fact that she is female. Simply because, you know, if the only reason why, the major point of distinction here isn't that, you know, she's a great scholar, maybe she is, maybe she isn't, but if the focus is going to be on the woman's voice, I don't see how that necessarily helps matters. Because if, I mean, let's put it a little more tactfully here. I'm not sure if any of that made sense. I'd much prefer that her role wouldn't, the focus, I think I said it right the first time, I would have preferred that the emphasis not have been on the gender component and more on her competency and her qualifications, if not superiority in learning, or to have someone in that position. And again, you could also,
That seems perfectly reasonable, but I would think it would, there would be a risk of diminishing her perceived stature if basically said, well, I don't trust that you know your stuff, so stand before this other.
Well, I'm not saying about stand before this other. I mean, the fact you have to like go through speaker. To give a parallel, there were some press releases about YU that they recently gave their first Talmud PhD to a female. You know, someone I know, she's really cool. Wonderful person. Yeah, you say cool, but you know,
PhD.
But you have an academic institution and they say, oh, it's a big deal. We finally gave a woman a PhD, and it's 2010, right? I'm sorry, 2011, not 2000. She actually got it recently, so whatever. Point is, you know, I would say by focusing, if you want to say she is an equal to everyone else, well, focus on the quality part, not the fact that, oh, something, if the distinguishing characteristic is purely gender, to me, you know, that would seem to take a little bit away from the actual accomplishment. That's a perception. It's an opinion. It's not a value judgment, and it has more to do with marketing than it does with, you know, any accomplishments there. Does that answer the question?
Sure. Yeah.
All right. So, was it a deviation from, you know, Orthodox Jewish tradition? Oh, absolutely. You could argue that that was also, again, Rabbi Weiss's intent. But the backlash from it, I think, was, you know, definitely clear. I think your point was very, I think, is well taken of, like, you know, maybe this is just an invective instead of actual halakhic exclusion. I honestly don't know how they treat Rabbi Weiss halakhically, whether or not they don't count him in minyan. But that is an interesting question. The fact that they say this is no longer orthodox, I think, does have an element of exclusion, as opposed to there's a difference to say we think such and such is wrong. I actually just installed, my father got a new computer and I put on for him the new Bar-Ilan. And on the new edition, which was purchased completely legally, there's a very interesting Azhara that points out that, you know, basically trashes anyone who, you know, breaks software piracy laws. And, sure, you know, that would be like a real invective there. But it doesn't, you know, use that term non-orthodox. When you use that term non-orthodox, I think that idiom is to, it's a certain form of delegitimization to say you are no longer one of us. So even if there may not be a halakhic repercussion, the fact that that term was used in those terms and that you're breaking from tradition, you know, which were things that we've, you know, idioms that we've seen before, and sort of, it's more analogous to like he's just, you know, chucking the entire system. And I do think even if they may not paskin in public, he can't count in minyan, I do think that the fact that these terms of non-orthodox were used in that language of exclusion, as opposed to saying we disagree or we think he's wrong, you know, but really throwing that in twice, meaning not just from, you know, the Rabbanim, but also back from anyone who puts a woman in this position is no longer orthodox, right? Is, I think, hearkening back to those, you know, old politics, those divisive lines, and I do think it's trying to recall that, even if they don't say so explicitly.
How similar is it to calling somebody un-American?
Un-American is more of an adjective, and it's not to say that, you know, we're... when someone does something that is un-American, there's a perception of this is American, and you're doing something that is actually violating what we consider to be an American norm. How would that be different? In a similar way, I think there could very well be similar. You know, if someone says so-and-so is un-American, it's like you're no longer one of us and you're now part of the other. Even if there may not be a legal repercussion, the whole point is to marginalize this person as an individual. When you say someone is unpatriotic, it's not just to say, like, if I have, you know, if you and I have a debate over, you know, security policy, I can say what you're trying to do can cause X number of deaths, right? And we can actually have reasoned arguments. Mm-hmm. You go through that rhetoric, I mean, even if it is just meant as an invective, the intent of the exclusivity, I think, is probably still comparable.
But I think it's much more on the invective side of the line. I mean, as to say, I can say you're being un-American, but that doesn't mean I think you should be you're as a legal matter, you should be voting in, say, Syria's elections instead of ours.
Here's the difference. When someone says someone is un-American, mm-hmm. there's no legal consequence. When you say someone is not orthodox, there could very well be halakhic consequences. Could be, or at least by implication. When you say that, you know, they're not following Gedolei yeah. Hador, they're violating Das Torah, the implication is you are no longer following halakhic Judaism. Right? Now, even if they don't say so explicitly, right? No one who says you're un-American, you know, and therefore we're going to now bring you up on treason charges, mm-hmm. right?
Do you remember the House Un-American Activities Committee?
Do I remember it? Well, I didn't live through it, but that would be a closer analogy, right? And that which would be, you know, the anti-communist stuff you could say was more of a politics of exclusion thing in a more hard-fest sense than it was a pure invective. Because then you actually had legal proceedings to try to, like, weed out the undesirables. Today, you know, if a politician, you know, throws out, you know, crazy rhetoric, it really is just a rhetoric. No one, you know, and even if people try, I mean, I've seen, you know, there's a website like Impeach Barack Obama, which, you know, people do, but that's, you know, even the impeachment thing has been used more as a political tool than an actual, you know, high crimes and misdemeanors. And, you know, the whole Clinton thing, you know, certainly brought that to head as well. I think here, if I would make a distinction between invective and exclusion, it's when you're doing it with the terms of non-orthodox, there would be halakhic implications. And because we don't have a clearly defined universal set of, you know, centralized set of halakhic authority, you know, it's very easy for people to make that leap, you know, certainly in a generation or two. And if not for Rabbi, well, I can tell you this. The musmachim, the graduates of Yeshivat Chovavei Torah, are not treated as rabbis in the same sense as a graduate of, say, Yeshiva University. The RCA, as of right now, does not accept graduates of Yeshiva Chovavei Torah. There's a whole internal discussion about that, but you could argue that it is because of Rabbi Avi Weiss and his, positions and stuff, that they don't. So, actually, now they've talked it out, yeah. There could be, it may not be him per se, but it definitely has some halakhic effects, after effects, in terms of, do we consider these mismachim to be part of really the rabbinic fraternity? One of the crazy things I found, and I've, pointed this out to people and never really got a response, is the Orthodox Union runs something called the Jewish Learning Initiative, to have rabbis on college campuses. At least a third of them are filled by Chovavei Torah graduates. And yet, the RCA, the rabbinic body, won't accept them as rabbis, even though they're technically being employed. Yeshiva Chovavei Torah graduates are being employed by the Orthodox Union to serve in a rabbinic capacity. Well, what are you going to do? That's, a separate issue, which I honestly don't understand how that works. And clearly, many of them do really phenomenal work and are fantastic at their jobs.
I think,
but that's a separate.
Before you arrived at this synagogue, the previous guy was a Chovavei.
Chovavei Torah, sure, by Pollock, Jesse Pollock, now up in Westport, Connecticut. Yeah, yep, yep. So, all right. So I guess that wraps it up for this. I'm trying to think about what to do, for next week, whether or not we have a specific topic or, we'll probably have to spend at least 1 week or 2 weeks, just discussing and, really covering everything that we've done here for the past several months. After that, we'll probably be on hiatus until after the Chagim, because that's when things get absolutely crazy. In which case, open for a whole new topics for what to do for next year, which will be pretty much, open topics on anything, hashkafa, halacha, anyone picks and see what we can do with it. So, again, I know I've asked this before, but please keep it in mind. And, have a wonderful week, and see you next week, and we'll see what we'll do then. Well,